The views expressed on the following program are not necessarily the views of WIBA, its management, sponsors, or staff.
Previously on Outside the Box.
Family plan for WPS. The Madison School District contribution is $1,765 a month. The contribution for the employee is $196. So that's, you're looking at $2,000 a month in a premium cost. Now, when that happens, you can see, Marjorie, while the taxpayers are not going to sympathize when we're told that there isn't any money.
You know, that's an argument that you know, is valid to some degree, and then not for other degrees. You would go into any kind of form of business, and people would be saying, look at our district and form of a business. Where do they pour their money in? Two things. Their people, their staff, research and development, produce new products. We're no different than in the school system. We don't have good people teaching our children. We're going to have terrible outcomes.
But this money is going into health insurance executives' pockets.
Well,
this
that's how you get good staff, too, by having good health insurance.
Welcome to Outside the Box with Mitch Henk. To be a part of the program, call 321-1310 or toll free at 877-235-1310 or email mitch@wiba.com. Now here's your host, Mitch Henk, on News Talk 1310 WIBA.
All right, we're going to continue this. This affects your school district, too. I mean, everybody has the same challenge as Madison has, and you see the front page story in the State Journal this morning. Vote on tax for schools considered. Well, it's kind of an ongoing process. They have these sort of ongoing shortfalls, and they have a new business manager, we're told, who's, according to some school board members, doing a good job trying to find some money in various places. But the idea is that they want to raise your taxes and go to this
referendum.
Don't mind him. He just interrupts occasionally. Let's go to Don Severson, who is the school watchdog and keeps everybody on their toes in the Madison School District. Good morning, Don.
Good morning, Mitch.
Now that you have your teeth cleaned, you're ready to go here.
Yes. Fresh breath.
You know, this, and Marjorie Passman's going to call back here momentarily. She had made a comment before the break that we I guess collectively, maybe she meant as a country or as a state or both, have not spent money on education since Sputnik. I thought that was kind of shocking. And what she was trying to say, and we'll let her explain it, was that all these mandates, which lost Don. We'll get Don
Marjorie's
back.
Marjorie's here, but I just
we
lost
have Marjorie
Don.
Marjorie now. Okay. It's sort of like musical chairs.
Ping pong game.
Marjorie,
yes.
Explain what you meant. You're talking about school mandates, correct?
Yes, we have certain mandates from the government on what instruction we should give children in our special education classes, children in our bilingual classes, and the government says, here's what you have to do. And they at first decided they would help us do this by giving us a certain amount of money for this. Sometimes it started out at 30% financing, 40%, and basically it's down to 12% and 14%, while our numbers have increased significantly.
They
and
have.
This is really...
Well, okay, let's take that, because our overall enrollment is really not dramatically increased, but what we hear from the education community is that our needs have increased, which prompted former Chancellor John Wiley to say that he thinks some school districts are too quick to categorize students as, you know, ADHD or whatever the case may be. And that, you know, you can say the need is up, but is there room for debate on that?
Well, I think Madison Schools has done a good job with that. I think they really have. If you go through the IEP process and the whole process that's going to determine whether a student is in special education, there has to be a lot of evidence. I think Madison is one of the better schools systems for this. We don't put somebody
correctly
in a special
categorizing
ed
students, you know,
yes,
as special.
No, I think we don't put children in special education because they're a behavior problem in the classroom. We put them in if they have a learning disability. But I also want you to keep in mind the number of children with autism that are increasing throughout the world at a very high rate. No one's able to explain that.
Oh, by the way, when the callers and two callers called right after your laugh to talked about comparing the per student or per pupil spending at a parochial school, say at $6,500 versus $13,000 in the public school, whatever it might be, and would that be your point that they don't have to take autistic children or children in wheelchairs?
Well, we're the only public institution that has to take anybody who knocks at our door, and I love that idea and I love that concept. And let's continue with that. Let's go up one stage on that. You know, the original founders of our country believed that an education is very important for democracy. Now, of course, it meant in the early stages of our history that rich white men or the landed gentry got the education. But as our country has developed, it's now, for the first time in the history, and probably the history of the world, universal education for every single child. And this is the foundation for democracy. Well, if we don't educate our children today for the future, we have no future.
But we're spending more money than we've spent in the past, and we're not necessarily getting the results, especially with at-risk
students. No, it costs
students.
More money to buy a toaster today. It costs more money to buy a house today. This is the general nature of our economy.
All right. Let's bring in our conscience, Don Severson, who's called
hey,
in, Marjorie. So,
Don, hey, how are you?
You're on with Marjorie. Okay, you've heard Marjorie's comments about the mandates and how we have to have them and they're not going to get the funding for them. What is your reaction to this this school referendum call and attempt by Superintendent Neurad to make it happen with some accounting gimmicks?
Oh, not gimmicks.
Well, not gimmicks, but, you know, what do you call them? Maneuvers. How about that, Marjorie?
How about subtractions from a budget? How about that? Reductions.
Okay, well, go ahead, Don.
They've taken some steps in the right direction in terms of closer collaboration with the board and the administration. And they're doing some very bona fide efforts at not taking anything for granted, not taking things at face value, but really, really digging in and evaluating. The shortcoming from that is that it's primarily structural and accounting. There hasn't been the drill down, the analysis, and the evaluation of programs and services in terms of how we're using the money that we do have. You know, it's well and good to take a look at efficiencies and accounting and structure and those kinds of things. But the other leg of that stool is that you really have to evaluate and analyze programs, costs, and results.
The merits of the program itself.
You know, this is absolutely valid. Don makes a very good point. We have a superintendent that's been here for 6 weeks. He has already said to the public that we're going to go through and have a strategic plan where we're going to actually analyze everything Don said. And in addition to that, we're going to bring in the community, and we're going to ask them and participate with them. Let's give this man a chance. He's only been here 6 weeks, and as far as I'm concerned, he has done some incredible things already. And as Don says, it's a beginning, and I am proud of that beginning. I am very proud of that beginning.
Okay, we're just looking at one thing, this Fund 80 issue, which is separate from the general fund, correct?
And that's one of the things the public has said. What are you doing with all this money in that fund? Get it out into the district, and that's exactly what he's done.
Okay, but it's separate, right? I mean, so if it's $2.2 million, you can't throw that in the general fund, can you?
Yes, you can. In fact, you can do it towards reductions, and that's what we did. The original number we thought it was going to be was our deficit was at 9. Then it came down to 8, and then using everything else he possibly could plus the Fund 80, he is bringing it down even further.
Okay. Well, again, we'll try to make it, and without getting too complicated, this idea that somehow because of that and some other accounting maneuvers, that people's tax bills are going to go down. I mean, that's what the story was this morning in the State Journal.
It's less than what we wanted originally, and we're trying desperately not to increase the burden for people. $28 a year, we hope, and don't quote me on that either, because we don't know yet.
Mm-hmm.
We've asked the accounting office, the business office, to go back and give us a breakdown on this. So we'll be more specific next Monday. We'll have more answers.
Well, according to the story, the estimate, the tax bill for 2010-11 will be $27.50 lower than it is now in an average home, and the bill the following year would be about $100 below its current level if voters back the referendum. And that's where people are probably going to be scratching their heads.
Well, I don't blame them. This is accounting talk, and thank God we have a business manager who is looking at all of these
and
things
the average
coming
home
up with them. But I literally saw people in the audience holding their heads.
And that's, and that's the average home of $250,000.
Yeah, and that's why we've asked them to reduce it. In fact, I've told them to put it on a 5.4 reading level.
There you go.
Because I need it.
Well, Don, what about you? Because you've got a pretty good reading level. Are you buying that, or what's your reaction to that?
Well, there's a lot of questions, and at this point in time, I don't want to be critical, except that we need additional information. No. I think we need to have the criteria and the basis for which these decisions were made. For example, you know, we're talking about assessed valuation of property and average cost of homes. You know, what's the basis for projecting? The assessed valuation has only gone up 1% in the last year, and we're used to 5 to 8%.
So you want to check the numbers?
Yeah, Don makes a valid point. And then we've also discussed that with our business manager and asked him to come up with that. And hopefully on Monday, if you don't hear it, Don, then pass me a message and I will ask that question.
Don, it sounds like Marjorie wants to work with you and make sure she crosses all the T's and dots all the I's here.
She has. I've been very pleased about her and other members of the board who are really open and receptive and willing to ask questions and play devil's advocate.
Well, I'm going to take this to the bottom of the segment.
It's a breath of fresh air.
We got to go to the break, and I don't know how much time you have, Marjorie, but I'll talk to you off the air. I'm going to continue this. I still want to get to the big picture and where the money is and whether we should change the way we fund education completely. This is News Talk 1310 WIBA. Don't go away.
News and weather together at the top and bottom of every hour on Madison's First News. Now more Outside the Box with Mitch Hank on News Talk 1310 WIBA.
Well, here we go. We'll finish this segment on the school funding crisis. We'll call it that because we seem to be in one. Wisconsin taxpayers certainly don't think that they're undertaxed when it comes to property taxes. A big chunk of your property tax bill going for schools. Marjorie Passman's still with us on the school board, talking about how the state and feds put mandates on to do certain things and they don't provide money, which is one problem. How we pay for schools. You know, John Erpenbach, Democrat of Middleton, wants to completely take schools off the property tax and use state sales and income taxes for that purpose. Mm-hmm. Mike Ellis, Senator from Neenah, has said we need to have a uniform property tax rate statewide, and then pay for special needs students with sales and income taxes as determined by DPI, Department of Public Instruction. And then if a school district wants to go beyond that, they go to a referendum. We've had all these proposals. We also have the issue of collective bargaining and negotiations, where Marjorie Passman, I would think that given the numbers we went into earlier, where the, for instance, the premiums for 40% of the teachers in Madison at $2,000 a month, that we should negotiate that in the next round and say, look, you know, we'll give you this much, the rest we're going to send into the general fund. And when the union says no to that, wouldn't the taxpayers be owed a trip to an arbitrator?
I don't have any history of this. I don't even know if it has ever been to arbitration. It might have been.
Well, Don,
I'm vaguely recalling a fact about some state law with health insurance, and I can't tell you it. I don't know it. But I do remember reading something about it.
Well, it's something to bone up on. But
I'm sure John Matthews can get back to you on that.
Well, I'm sure, and he'll do what he has to do. He's doing his job.
That's exactly right.
Don Severson, what about that? I mean, do you think that that should be something the school board should take up?
Well, I think the school board and the union really need to take a comprehensive look at the whole healthcare issue. It's not just the premiums for health insurance. I think you also have to look at how disability benefits are managed. I think you have to look at how sick leave is managed. There's never been a competitive bid as far as either the preferred provider or the HMO.
Well, let's just stick with group health versus WPS. I mean, the family contribution by the school district on group health is $974 a month compared to $1,765 WPS.
Right.
The employee contribution for group health is zero, and the employee contribution for WPS, $196, which makes it $2,000 a month. Now, and I know that's wonderful insurance, but there's a huge savings between $974 and $1,765. Now, Marjorie points out that if you save that money, you'd put it into salaries. Well, that's because of the contract,
correct,
which are up for negotiations.
Correct.
So, I mean, it seems to me that the average person at home thinks you could probably get some pretty good insurance with group health. Apparently, what is that, 60% of the teachers, Marjorie?
No, it's down
60% are on group health, 40% on WPS. I don't know what the new batch of teachers are doing, okay. But if it follows, that the numbers are going down each year.
Well, 40%.
It's been typical new teachers to the district or new teachers to teaching opt for the HMO.
That's right.
And the
new teachers. You mean the group health?
Group health.
The percentage of teachers on the preferred provider, WPS, has been going down, and that's largely because of attrition, retirements, yeah. or disabilities or other factors.
Right. Let's get on to something that still is the most important
thing. Well, I'm just trying to go where the money is, Marjorie.
Well, I want to go where the kids are.
Okay, go ahead.
Okay.
Go ahead.
And, you know, we can discuss, you know, these individual issues, and they're valid, and they should be discussed, I admit to you. But the simple fact is that we have to do the best for our children that we possibly can. And since the 1970s, the government has abandoned us. And I don't blame the average citizen whose property taxes are going up. We do need another means of taxation for our schools. We can no longer afford to just use the property tax. And please try to remember something. Not 100% of our property taxes goes to schools.
I understand that, yeah.
Okay, but the public thinks so. The public thinks we get everything they
get. It's about 55% of the bill, isn't it?
You know, it's gone down over the years. It's not. I don't think it's 55 anymore. And I think the city needs our money, too, and the county needs our money.
Yeah, I understand that.
So, we certainly have to. We leave it up to our leaders to try to change this. And nobody's done anything. No one stepped forward. And I'm hoping, this is my hope, and I said it last night. If we can get through the next 3 years on this recurring referendum, I hopefully will see a change in Washington. I hopefully will see a change in the state assembly. And then maybe, just maybe, we can start turning this around. There was an editorial in yesterday's New York Times saying the corporations aren't even paying their federal taxes. Well, they're certainly not paying their taxes in the state of Wisconsin either.
Well, we pay
that. This is something we should be looking into. If you want to attack somebody, attack
Marjorie,
that.
Marjorie, you know, we'll put it on the table, but as long as you agree to work with Don on trying to save money where it's being spent unwisely.
Well, I think when Don said that it looks promising, that's praise indeed coming from him. And I accept that.
Okay. All right. We're going to try to. Don, appreciate it. We'll keep talking to both of you as we move forward, okay?
Bye, Don.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. We got David Ferdoso, The Case Against Obama, his new best-selling book. This is News Talk 1310 WIBA.
Now back to Outside the Box. All guests on Outside the Box appear courtesy of the Charter phone line, part of the Charter bundle package. Once again, here's Mitch Henk on News Talk 1310 WIBA.
A couple of minutes, we're going to be talking to David Ferdoso, who has written a new book. It's a bestseller, New York Times list, The Case Against Obama. And what we're going to try to get to is this question about this so-called Illinois Born Alive bill, which Obama was asked about by the Christian Network the other day in a one-on-one interview after his appearance at the church in California before John McCain went out there. And what's happening here is that there was a bill in Illinois a few years back. It was before he went to the U.S. Senate, and Obama was a state senator. And there was a bill that would have protected infants that survive late-term abortions. In fact, there was a nurse who testified from a hospital who apparently had cradled an infant, a Down syndrome infant, for 45 minutes that was alive outside the mother's body, and that it was left to die in the hospital. Well, so they went with this legislation. We're talking about infants outside the woman's body. Well, Obama voted against this particular bill. He was saying there was no language in the bill that would have protected Roe versus Wade, and he's now saying that there was always a law in Illinois that requires life-saving support techniques to be applied for babies outside the womb, and that this is all political. Well, in 2001, the federal government passed legislation supported by Ted Kennedy, supported by Nancy Pelosi, everybody, that would have protected infants that survive late-term abortions. Now, Obama said in his campaign for the U.S. Senate against Alan Keyes that the legislation was different at the federal level, and he would have voted for that. Now, Obama critics, including David Ferdoso and others, are trying to say that, no, the legislation that Obama opposed in Illinois, at least one of the three versions, one that was killed in his committee, had the same language codifying Roe versus Wade as the federal legislation. So that if Obama is trying to say that they are different, then Obama is not telling the truth. So we are efforting Joe Fredoso now, and we'll come to that, and we're going to take a quick break and come back and try and get that for you, because I think Pat Caddell, who's a longtime Democratic consultant and longtime Democratic pollster, made the comment last night that if Obama is wrong about this, if the language in the Illinois bill, in the Illinois Senate bill, basically said the exact same thing as the federal legislation that passed overwhelmingly, including Ted Kennedy and Nancy Pelosi, and if he's going to try to say that the bills were different and that they aren't different, then Obama has a problem. We will come back and explore this and hook up with David Fredoso. This is News Talk 1310 WIBA.
Exercise your right to freedom of speech. Call now at 321-1310 or toll free at 1-877-235-1310. Or sound off on today's topic on the web at WIBA.com. Now, here's your host, Mitch Hank, on News Talk 1310 WIBA.
All right, having some hookup problems with David Fredoso, but I'll put the money or the phones open to you. And the question is, Obama, and there'll be some 527 ads, some independent group ads hitting Obama on this, quote, Illinois bill, this Born Alive bill, this bill that would have in the Illinois State Senate protected the infants that survive late-term abortions, actually infants outside the woman's body. Obama stood in opposition to this in Illinois, saying that it would undermine Roe versus Wade. Now, is Obama potentially in trouble on this? Could this be a big issue for Obama, or is it only going to affect people who would vote against Obama anyway? That's the question. 321-1310 outside the Madison area, 877-235-1310, because it's being panned off as, hey, Obama's pro-choice, you know, that's the way it is. But see, there's a difference here, and this is why Obama, I think, has a problem. He's going to have to explain this. I think Roe versus Wade, first of all, the Justice Blackmun ruling, I mean, we're talking about first trimester abortions, that women had the right to terminate pregnancies in the first trimester. Now, you have these gray areas with late-term abortions where people that have not voted for bans on them have said, well, there has to be a health exception for the mother, a life and health exception for the mother. Well, I do think there is a difference in palatability on this issue, which is very difficult for a lot of people anyway. When it comes to late-term abortions, if you're talking about, you know, third-trimester abortions. Now, this is being called by commentators on the right, Ann Coulter last night, going against Pat Caddell on Fox News' Hannity and Combs, as the fourth trimester. Now, if this is an issue that's going to be out there on the airwaves with independent ads, Obama is going to have to explain this. Obama now is fiercely, as he did the other night in the interview with the Christian Broadcasting Service commentator, that his position is being misconstrued and that his critics are lying about his position, saying that, yes, there's already Illinois law that protects infants that are independent of the woman's body, and that this is demagoguing, and that he voted against that bill because it didn't protect Roe versus Wade. Now, he can do all this if he wants. His critics, including David Fredoso, have said no, that the language that passed in the federal government in 2001 protecting infants that survive late-term abortions is identical to that which was written in the Illinois bill before that. Now, the question is this going to hurt Obama, or does it matter? Or the people that are going to be bothered by this are people that are going to vote against Obama anyway? What do you think? 321-1310 outside the Madison area, 877-235-1310. But if I look at this, I actually agree with the analysis of Pat Caddell. If, in fact, Obama can argue and prove, by the way, I've looked at the wording. It's just so complicated and convoluted of the Illinois Senate bill. I mean, it would just, you know, the way these things are written is just not for broadcast. It's so the minutia just jumps out at you. But if he can argue that they were different because of the wording and that there was Illinois law protecting infants anyway and make that case, then I suppose he has an argument. And then the people that are pro-life who are going to vote against him anyway would continue to vote against him. But I think if, in fact, that language of the Illinois Senate bill and the federal bill are the same, and that what Obama said in his Senate race against Alan Keyes was not honest, then I think he has a big problem. At that point, you could expect it to come up in a debate, and Obama at that stage is going to have to handle it. And let's go to Dick. This is News Talk 1310 WIBA. Good morning, Dick.
Hi, Mitch. I just wanted to say that I think in the long run it could hurt Obama because McCain draws some liberal votes anyway. And so the ones who maybe were teetering on the more liberal fringe that may vote for McCain, this could throw them over into his camp. And besides the fact, you know, when Obama tried to say that he didn't say all those things, I think it's either Wisconsin right, or it's either Wisconsin right to life, or the federal right to life organization has the documentation on their website.
Well, and I had it too. I had it sent to me by the David Ferdoso publicist, who's written the book Case Against Obama. But I'm telling you, it's so convoluted the way these things are written and these statutory. I mean, it's incredible how complicated and convoluted it is. But I think that's the challenge. And I do think that people who are very militantly pro-Obama or the other way don't see the political reality. And, Dick, there is a palatability difference between abortion in the first trimester and third trimester with the public. Now, people that feel strongly about this issue don't change their core belief. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying the general public opinion barometer. There is a difference here between late-term and early-term abortions, and it brings in a whole population of voters who otherwise wouldn't be deterred by somebody, whether they're pro-choice or pro-life, and would look to other issues, and I think that's what's at play here. Thanks, Dick. Let's go to Patrick. This is News Talk, 1310 WIBA. Good morning, Patrick.
Hey, Mitch. How are you?
Hi. How are you?
I think it's just one more data point against Obama. You know, there's no single point for people who are undecided that is maybe going to sway them, but it's one more data point in the coffin.
Well, okay. Everybody knows that Obama is pro-choice. He said it the other day with Pastor Rick Warren at his church. I mean, that's one thing, and you've got a lot. I mean, we've had pro-choice presidents. Bill Clinton was. Actually, George Bush the first was until he changed before he was elected. In other words, you see my point about the difference between abortion in the traditional first trimester sense and the late term.
Oh, yeah.
In terms of public opinion. And so you've got these charges now against Obama that he's, you know, and what I've seen him do is say that he's being misconstrued and that people are lying about his record and that the language was different in the two versions of the bill and he would have supported the federal bill had he been in Congress. Well, the charge is that no, the language was the same. Okay, so this has to be, you know, this has to play out.
Well, that's his people advising him that the language was
different. Well, Obama said that himself on the campaign stump against the incredibly weak opponent, Alan Keyes, in his Senate race of 2004. Okay, because Keyes brought it up. And it was you know, and Obama explained it away. He said, no, it's different language. And
Obama can explain anything away the next day after his team regroups. I mean, bottom line, if we're all going to be driving electric cars in 10 years, Obama's against nuclear power plants, and we need a bunch of nuclear power plants all over.
Well,
I mean,
you know,
that's the major data point.
Well, you're getting to energy now, which is a little bit off the topic. I think this is what we're talking about in this particular segment is very crucial in this election. Thanks for the call, Patrick. 321-1310 outside the Madison area, 877-235-1310. You know, because if it's in fact the case, if you can pretty much prove in the media, the mainstream media, the Andrea Mitchells of the world, NBC News and others, can go to the copy, you can go to the text of the minute, you know, the wording of these legislative texts and in essence explain that they're basically the same. And on one hand, Obama would have supported the ban in 2001 if he'd been in Congress at the time. versus the bill that he voted on in the Illinois Senate, which he says didn't protect Roe versus Wade. If it's proven by the mainstream press that he's full of it and that they were the same, then he's forced to go into the debate, in my view, and say, look. And when they ask him the question, he's going to have to say this. Look, I was in Chicago. I saw a lot of 14-year-old girls having babies. I met more than my share of 27- and 28-year-old grandparents. I didn't want to see any more of those. I thought that, the unwanted pregnancies were out of control, and I wanted to do whatever I can. And at the time, I was skewed by that mindset. And that was going into my thinking and my opposition, because I certainly wanted to protect their right under Roe versus Wade. Now, having looked at it and seeing that the wording would have protected Roe versus Wade, and that what we're talking about here is legislation, though, even though he had laws in Illinois that protect infants, that it would have been no damage, it wouldn't have hurt anything to vote for it. I now think that I made a mistake. And but my mind was focusing on 14-year-olds with babies and 28-year-old grandparents in my neighborhood in the South Side, and that's what was driving my position on this. I was concerned about Roe versus Wade. I never at any point thought infants would be unprotected, because Illinois law specifically requires that life support must be engaged if in fact, an infant needs that care. And that's my position. And how it's misconstrued now, I can understand, but I would never have supported that had I thought that infants in that situation were in some kind of peril. And looking back, I think I would have voted differently now, and I apologize for any misunderstandings. I mean, what else could he say? What else would he say at that point? Derek, hi. This is News Talk 1310 WIBA. Good morning, Derek.
Good morning, Mitch. I don't think there's much else you can say. This whole issue is so great, such a gray area for so many people that are pro-choice.
Well, but I think it gets less gray in the latter stages. I mean, when you get into the late term.
Oh, yes.
And this is a political point I'm just making here. There's a difference in palatability in terms of public opinion.
For sure. I mean, conservatives always try to make it black and white from, like, you know, life begins at conception. And for most people, it's the gray area. But I think Obama's really just stepped into the black area pretty far.
Well, I mean, it's one thing. It's one thing to talk about life beginning at conception, for instance, in the case of in vitro fertilization and stem cell, when you've got a fertilized egg in a petri dish, and if it doesn't go inside a woman, then you know you're not going to have the definition of a human being that you and I might have,
exactly.
And how the debate changes on the ethics front once it's involving a woman's womb. Now, and that to me is another argument altogether. And even McCain has come out in favor of that stem cell research. And the president, as you know, expanded federal funding for it.
Right.
The first president to do that. Now, what we're talking about here is something else.
Well, yeah, but I mean, this is normally just a gray issue for people, you know, who are pro-choice.
Well,
I just think now he's taken it beyond the gray area. And now it's.
Well, the danger is, being portrayed. You know, as infants outside the body of the woman, alive.
Yeah.
And that's why they're calling it the Born Alive Bill. This is very dangerous for Obama and how he handles this. Thank you, Derek. Let's go to Mary Ann. This is News Talk 1310 WIBA. Good morning, Mary Ann.
Yes, I agree with you and most of your callers, because yesterday I heard a quotation from Obama on your own radio station saying that if his daughters made a mistake, i.e. got pregnant.
It was during the campaign, yeah.
Yeah, that he wouldn't want them to be burdened with a child.
Paying with a baby, yeah.
Yeah, well, that's basically saying it's okay for my daughters to kill off my grandchildren, and how can you condone that in a president of the United States?
Well, he was campaigning in Pennsylvania at the time, and again, I think his mindset was focusing on unwanted pregnancies, and probably what he had experienced in Chicago was seeing 13- and 14-year-old mothers and 28-year-old grandparents.
Well, I'm sorry, but where does teaching people to be personally responsible instead of killing off a mistake come into the play? I mean,
What I'm saying, Mary Ann, is there are probably countless examples that Obama had witnessed of 14-year-olds who had no business being parents. Okay, now, I understand, I'm not trying to argue with your belief on this in the terms of those young girls, you know, not being equipped to be parents and perhaps putting children up for adoption, which would be the anti-abortion argument. But again, I think people's the way you see those types of things can be different in the south side of Chicago than might be in Stevens Point.
Well, to me, a good community activist would be somebody who would teach responsibility, teach the consequences of your actions, and get these south side kids to a point where they, you know, have mentors and stability. But you just can't say, oh, you have a bad life, and so you're going to have sex and have kids when you're 13 and then kill them off because they might be a burden.
I understand your position, Marianne.
I'll hang up so you can get some more callers.
Thank you. I don't know that he's advocating that people get pregnant so they can have abortions. Matt, hi. This is News Talk 1310 WYBA. Good morning, Matt.
Morning, Mitch. I think that Obama can't really defend himself because he can either take two positions. A, I didn't read the legislation, so I don't know whether it's different. Or B, this is, you know, I'm so strongly in the left's camp that whenever this type of bill comes up, this is the way I'm always going to vote. And well, I think that trying to defend it after the fact, you know, without standing up on the floor of the Senate in Illinois saying, here's why I oppose this legislation because of X, Y, Z. If he didn't do that, he didn't read the legislation, which I think is probably what actually happened. He got bullet points on what it was. Or B, he's so far in the other side's camp. The other thing to look at, too, is why didn't Obama come out and said, you know, we should look into the healthcare professionals who violated their Hippocratic oath and they should be prosecuted? Why isn't he saying that? Because it was infanticide what they did.
The problem is this is now a can of worms that is going to continue to build. My view is that Obama is going to have to come out and say that he was defending Roe versus Wade, he was defending a woman's right to choose, and that was primary.
But by saying that, he's defending infanticide. This wasn't a woman's right to choose.
No, the baby
was born. And that, I can guarantee you, what I'm saying is how the other side is going to paint it and how people are going to see it.
Right. What he's going to have to say is that he at no point was condoning, you know, the lack of care for an infant who needed care, because there is Illinois law, by the way, Matt, that requires that life-saving support techniques be employed immediately if somebody needs it. Period. And that's regardless of this law, of this bill.
But he's not championing that right now. He's not coming out demanding that those who allowed a baby to die are prosecuted. Because he's afraid that if he says that, then... He's going to be knocked for it.
He was championing that the other day in his interview with the Christian Broadcasting Service reporter when he kept hitting over and over again the Illinois law that requires life support be employed immediately. And the trouble is, if he's got language the same in the federal bill versus the one he says he opposed, then he's going to have to come out and say he made a mistake. We will come back. This is News Talk 1310 WIBA.